Welcome to the full Tracy Monday audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:06 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is September 12th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today and look at Apple. They just had their product announcement, and there's really nothing new to report, so the share is down. And of course, then yesterday they also had the disappointment that they're not going to have their own chip, so they've extended their contract with Qualcomm. So good news for Qualcomm, but not great news for Apple. And let's be just perfectly frank about it. What has Apple come up with in the last decade? They brought out a smartwatch, and as a user of smartwatches, and I have an Apple Watch. I never use it. It's sitting in my drawer. I wouldn't give up my Garmin for anything. And I think that's for anyone who's serious about sports or measuring real data, there's absolutely no need to have an Apple. But that doesn't stop people from buying them as a fashion object. And if you're selling fashion objects, that's fine. Now, there's plenty of other things to talk about. What else should we think about today? Well, let's also start to think about where are we in terms of the stock market if Apple looks like it's rolling over. And then let's think about, well, what else is going on? Because the dollar was a bit stronger in here today. And then oil prices were up, not just a little, but up over a dollar. So pulling away from the $90 level now and extending the rebound. I think that's certainly worth considering. Then we've had quite a bit of variability in natural gas prices. US prices are rising, European prices are falling. And there were lots of breathless commentaries about the impact of the strike in LNG workers or among LNG workers in Australia. It really hasn't had much of an impact. I don't think anybody really expects it to last all that long either. But of course, strike action is something that is going to become increasingly more prevalent. If we think about what's happening in Australia with LNG workers, they have a privileged position in that they do have control over the supply. And if they decide not to work, well, then it does have a knock-on effect for the company, and they'll have to negotiate. The United Auto Workers Union in the USA will be looking at what happened with UPS, and they're going to part of the negotiations is that they want to be paid for 40 hours, but they only want to work for 32 hours. And wouldn't we all love to have that kind of pay bump? Then, when we think about what's happening in Europe, well, in the UK, the rents are rising. And obviously, that's going to have a knock-on effect because when people demand more wages or higher wages, then sometimes it's a nice to have. But when you can't afford to live, well, then you have to ask for more money. And, or more to the point, you have to demand it. And that is what creates a cause for industrial action. It's also what drives membership of unions so that you get collective bargaining power. And I think that is something that we can anticipate is going to be a more pronounced factor. Then, what's interesting in Mexico right now is that the bond yield is up to about 10%. The stock market is pulling back a bit, but the Mexican peso has bounced in a fairly dynamic manner. And then in India, where the currency has been something of a headwind for the appreciation of the stock market, the Nifty was in negative territory today, so pausing around that big psychological 20,000 level. And then, of course, we have what's going on in China, and I think the willingness to actually do something about the contraction in the property sector is very reluctant, and that continues to weigh on the stock market there. So let's go back then and think about what's happening with Apple. So we had the failed upside break. There was a massive reaction, and the dynamic of the pullback and the dynamic of the failure is larger than the dynamic of the breakout. So this is looking like at least consolidation. Now the price is still in the region of the 200-day moving average, but I suspect that we are going to see additional downside. I don't see any particular reason why people will rush out and buy an Apple 15 when all you get is a slightly better camera. And this concentration on camera quality is something that they've all been trying to do, Samsung and Apple as well. And basically, how much better can the camera be? And is that going to be enough to justify the price? So, and then of course, there is the additional point that we're not quite yet at the height of the replacement cycle. So then there is quite the likelihood that Apple is not going to have as good a fourth quarter this year as they did last year. So the share is just about holding on in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, I think it's most particularly important just to zoom out and start thinking about what all this means. Because the NASDAQ 100 was up in fairly strong territory yesterday, and it had a big rebound, particularly from Tesla. The index has been consolidating in the region of the peak from back in 2021 for the last 2 months, and it's so far still quite steady. And a really sustained move below the 200-day moving average would, I think, be required to really start to highlight for investors that this is a more meaningful period of underperformance. And we haven't had that yet. So the degree of profit erosion that investors have experienced isn't particularly high. And then, of course, we've had these rock star performances by companies like Nvidia. But the issue with Nvidia is that it got up to 500 and it has stopped rising. So I think this is also an important consideration that the real, I guess, big performer isn't still making new highs. So momentum is starting to ebb. So then let's then zoom out and look at the performance of those exceptionally large companies relative to the total market. And it has paused, but it is not coming down. And the Fangman companies, so that is the eight large companies, I still include Netflix in that, has been pretty much performing in line with the wider market since May. And it was on the cusp of breaking on the upside yesterday and then started to come down a little in here today. So we're not yet at any kind of panic moment here for these mega cap companies. They're still firing, but they are also very dependent on consumer demand. We can think about the what has been the primary driver of the theme within this sector. It was These were the companies that made the best use of access to free money and then were able to leverage 4G in order to really flood the global market with their products. So then if you think about Apple with the phones, so that was the medium through which people accessed 4G. Microsoft, by adopting the subscription business model and then products that can be accessed via the phone or via the computer, but then thriving on 4G and cloud computing. Amazon, obviously, with shopping online and cloud computing and offering Amazon Web Services. Google doing search online and then also its own cloud services. And then we think about Netflix. It didn't even exist. It was only selling or it was only renting DVDs through the mail until the evolution of 4G, which allowed streaming to evolve. Then we can think about the broad the ability of Tesla to update its software over the internet, which is a completely new phenomenon, and it allowed the company to improve the range and the software in their vehicles without anyone ever having to go into a dealership to upgrade. So that's another very significant evolution. But it was driven by 4G and then the leverage that they were able to acquire through exceptionally low interest rates. Well, now interest rates are higher, and the dependence on consumer demand for that earnings growth is one of the hallmarks of that grouping. So, as long as consumers are still flush with cash and buying, then they'll remain okay. But it's when we start to see growth starting to roll over and earnings starting to disappoint, that's when we'll start to see greater underperformance. And I think that's going to be particularly relevant for all of these other ratios. Because one way to look at the underperformance of value relative to growth is that value must be cheap. But perhaps the better way of thinking about it is that growth is expensive. And I do think that is the more correct way. Because when we look at ex-US relative to US, then we have almost exactly the same pattern. We have this exceptionally lengthy period of underperformance of ex-US relative to US. And that is because you have the same pattern, and it's basically the same thing. It doesn't matter what you want to compare it to. The high growth sector in the USA has outperformed everything. So it's not that everything is cheap, but rather that it is that the tech sector is expensive and it is still performing. So that is, I think, one of the most important characteristics to identify with this market, that when the tech sector rolls over, it's going to immediately make absolutely everything else look more attractive. And then, of course, that's what investors want, is they want to capture the relative value. But in order to do that, it's not simply that growth will have to roll over, but also the dollar would have to weaken. And the dollar is not weakening. It was up in it was in positive territory again in here today. So not in a dynamic manner, but certainly holding the breakout. And it has clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs and is still moving higher. And this is on the assumption that the interest rate differential in favor of the USA is going to continue to widen. Now, we're going to have CPI figures coming out tomorrow. And it really is a question then of how much of a lag there's going to be between the jump that we've seen in oil prices and how long it takes for that to filter down into CPI figures, because oil prices are surging. And this is a significant issue. When oil prices or energy prices are surging, then it's a tax on consumption that is very immediate, and it forces consumers to tighten up because they still need to drive to work, they still need to do the school runs, and when energy prices are marching higher, then it starts to become a problem quite quickly. So we're now back at levels that we were at when the USA was expending its reserves from the strategic reserves, and you can't do that twice. So there's no additional big source of new supply that's ready to hit the market. And OPEC is intentionally supporting prices here. And they have a clear intention to ensure that prices stay above the $80 level and that they're going to be able to balance their budgets. So it's very much the OPEC strategy to have a higher for longer prices. But of course, the higher prices go, then the bigger the potential impact there is for demand. So we're only at the beginning of this right now, but let's just go back and think about what happened in 2008. So prices had been depressed ahead of the big commodity bull market, and then really started to rally between 2003 and 2006. We had a good size shakeout in late 2006, and then in 2007, prices went from about $50 to $150 in the space of only a year. And that spike in energy prices was coincident with a very significant recession. So we have to at least allow for the possibility that the continued strength in energy, for as long as it lasts, is going to represent an increasingly powerful headwind. Now, that doesn't mean that the energy sector can't rise as long as oil prices are going up. So the energy spider has now sustained the move above the $90 area, and it's on the cusp of breaking on the upside. And the more back history we look at, the longer this range looks. And this looks like a fairly bullish consolidation. And having now confirmed support and held the sequence of higher reaction lows, and this has been a very substantial rebound. It could have been a top formation about 6 months ago, but it did rebound and it has now improved considerably. So now there is the potential here that it could pop on the upside, or at least go up and test that 100 level. And Shell has cleared the 2500p level and coming back up to the upper side of a really phenomenally lengthy range. And prices have been pausing below the 2500 level for an awfully long time. So this would be a very meaningful breakout. But of course, the reason why there is less supply is because the majors aren't spending. They don't want to invest in long-term projects when they don't know what the regulatory environment is going to be in a year, much less in a decade. So that means there's not going to be a big surge of new supply, and until they have a very clear vision on what their welcome is likely to be if they were to go off and spend a ton of money. And then let's think about natural gas, because the price is very depressed. And it was up about 13 cents in here today. And there has been a sequence, and it's a very mild sequence, but it's there, a sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last few months. And it has just about unwound the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. Now, natural gas is still a very localized market, but it obviously is becoming more globally traded. But what I find interesting is just how variable some of these prices are. So when we look at the UK price, then it was in negative territory today. So we don't see a lot of correlation between what's happening in Europe and what's happening in the USA. What we do know is that Europe's reserves are pretty full. So they don't have a lot of additional storage to put more natural gas into it. And that pretty much means that the lack of supply coming out of Australia because of the LNG strike isn't creating a big push in the energy price, simply because they've already filled up ahead of the winter. And there's the reality that Ukraine might be fighting through the winter. They're being supplied with cold weather gear from NATO. So they are likely to try and push this war into a total war and not simply allow the status quo to remain in effect over the winter. Well, that suggests that potentially there will be additional volatility at some point over the next few months. But for now, the price is still hovering here and still right below the 100 euro level. But if we then think about the Dutch price, then it's not all that different. So I think that there isn't going to be the same panic around natural gas prices in Europe this winter as we've had in the past. Prices are well contained. Now they're still high relative to where they were before the invasions, or the invasion of Ukraine, but they're not even remotely close to where prices were in 2021 or 22. So that is at least a positive development. Now, when we then think about the gold price, with the dollar still quite steady, then gold is pulling back and coming back to test the $1,900 area. Now, I remain very much of the view that it is real rates, the trajectory of real rates, is going to be the most important factor. When this chart turns around, then that's going to be the primary tailwind for a rebound in the gold price. But for now, at least, we have positive real rates and hovering here just below the 200 basis point level. This has been a phenomenally large move on the upside, and it's the primary reason why the dollar is quite steady. Eventually, the dollar will decline because I think it is more likely than not that the Federal Reserve has probably tightened too much already and that they might still tighten more because oil prices continue to move on the upside. And that is going to have inflationary pressures. And a lot of the decline in inflation has probably been because of the decline in energy prices. So if energy is popping back up again, then it's quite likely that inflation is not going to be conquered, and that instead it could surprise on the upside. And since they have been singing from the 2% songbook for the last year, then they're not going to have a lot of choice. And then the core services ex housing figure isn't going to be updated again until the end of this month. But it's currently around 4.69%, and it is sustaining the breakout from this very long range. And the last time we've had inflation, or at least this measure of inflation, this high, was in the early 1990s, and back then it was on the way down rather than on the way up. This looks and still looks much more like the beginning of the inflationary trend in the 1960s. And if that is indeed the case, well, then it's going to be very difficult for the Federal Reserve to stop raising rates. And they're not going to cut rates until they have clear evidence of a slowing economy, which means higher unemployment. And low growth and high unemployment, that's a recession. Or if you get positive growth and high unemployment amid higher inflation, well, then that's stagflation. So it's not a particularly encouraging suite of potential outcomes. And then, if we think about what is likely when eventually these issues come to bear and the dollar does roll over, it will be beneficial for gold, it'll be beneficial for emerging markets. And I was looking at the candidates for the presidential election in Mexico, and they're both incredibly well-credentialed women, and with very impressive degrees in engineering and computer science. And regardless, I think, of who wins, it's going to be a positive for the country that you're going to have more technocratic leaders. And yes, they're certainly increasing the deficit, just like countries prime the pump ahead of elections in lots of other countries, particularly the USA and the US presidential cycle. The entire thing is based upon the expectation that they will prime the pump ahead of the election. In fact, the fact that the USA is running such a large deficit in 2023 when there's an election in 2024, well, that's also an example of a country running a massive deficit a year ahead of an election. So The Mexican peso, though, was in positive territory today, and it's bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And Mexico is now the biggest exporter to the USA and has exceeded China. So it's not simply that they're building cars down there, or that Tesla is building its gigafactory there, that there's lots of money flowing into the utilities sector. And of course, what that is, that is in advance of expected demand growth in electricity. So electrification of the Mexican economy is something that investors appear to be betting on. And of course, with the provision of excess electricity, manufacturing is something that will follow along there. So it is very likely that it is Chinese companies also are going to build factories there so that they will have the ability to export into the US market. And this is not all that different to the kind of strategy that Japan took when they started running out of workers and demographics started going against them. Then Japan went out and invested in lots of emerging market countries for the mining, but then they also invested a lot in emerging markets for manufacturing capacity. And that, I think, is exactly what China will also do. Chinese companies rather than than the Chinese government. Now, India was in mildly negative territory today. This looks like a consolidation in the region of the 20,000 level, and we might see just some additional pause here, just because it is a big psychological level. And the banking index was also up a little, but off the peaks. Then the UK is in a difficult scenario right now because the property prices are starting to come back down and wage growth is going up, but the bond yield is beginning to look a little bit more toppy and is now below the 4.5% level. So if the economy is slowing down and then property prices are contracting, and the ability of people to sustain their outsized spending patterns that really took off during the pandemic, then that is the kind of thing that will get inflation under control. And I think it is a foretaste of what we can anticipate in the USA, that a lot of people upgraded their lifestyles during 2020 and 2021. And it's only a matter of time, and people don't generally give up those lifestyles voluntarily, but rather they're forced to. And that generally means a painful period for people. But of course, what it also does in the medium to longer term is to create inflationary pressures through wage demand growth. And I think that is something that is going to come back and bite a significant number of countries over the next several years. So I think we are going to have some deflationary pressures, and that will occur in tandem with a recession. Ultimately, the inflationary trend is something that has the potential to come back over the medium term. And it basically means that central banks aren't going to be in a position to drop interest rates back to zero, and that we will probably then have a higher reaction low in bond yields, and that the 1,000-day moving average will now be support where in the past it had been resistance. That basically suggests that a halving of yields for the 10-year gilt is possible, but perhaps not much more than that. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.